This is an examination of the hidden human condition.
This is the Hidden Killers podcast
with Tony Bruschi.
We are talking with retired FBI Special Agent Bobby Chacone today. Bobby, I want to talk about the Nikki Alcaraz case. She was found safe last week, but obviously mistakes were made in New Mexico, where police initially stopped this couple, saw a lot of evidence of abuse. Even someone else called in and reported her being beaten by her boyfriend, and yet they were let go. It has so many echoes of the Gabby Petito police stop, and we all know how that ended. Luckily, that's not how this story has ended yet. What's your take on all this as far as what kind of mistakes were made here that put her back into danger for the next several weeks, and many almost believing that she was dead?
Yeah, well, even a truck driver, I think, passing by called in and said he saw the boyfriend punch her in the face. So now you have a witness saying it's not even a he said, she said thing. It's a witness saying. Now, of course, he'll have bruises on her. She's probably defending herself.
Sure.
But in these types of situations, and it's like you said, it's eerily similar to the Gabby Petito case, where, you know, they were, Gabby and Brian Laundrie were separated from each other. They were given the opportunity to make phone calls, reach out for family and friends or whatever support network that they have. In this case, they did the same thing. Yeah. They separated them. That's the protocol, I guess. They gave them each opportunities to be away from each other in it more of a safe haven. And she even, I think, contacted her sister during that time. But as in the Gabby Petito case, they got back together somehow. And this is part of that, you know, psychological cycle of abuse where a woman that's being abused by, you know, an intimate partner, this is that intimate partner danger, intimate partner violence, intimate partner homicide, that, you know, they go back to their abuser. And in this case, she went back, and that was worrisome because they let them go. There are some jurisdictions where if the police show up and it's a kind of a domestic violence situation, and even if one person has a bruise on them, somebody's going to jail.
Yeah.
It's just, that's the protocol in some jurisdictions. I know, like in Suffolk County, New York, when I was growing up, that I remember they made that rule. I don't know if it still is, but it was, you know, if somebody has a bruise, mostly likely the female, because we know from the statistics that most of these situations, the aggressor is the male, the physically stronger party is the male, and they tend to assault the woman. And so some jurisdictions say, you know what, you're going to spend a night in jail. And whatever, however they handle it after that, I don't know. The, each jurisdiction is different.
Sure.
And so, you know, that's that cooling off period. That's that time to give the other person a chance to reach out to whatever support network they might have. And then some jurisdictions have said, we don't care if the abused person doesn't want to press charges. We're going to go ahead and prosecute that person. Now, it's difficult at trial because everybody has the right to, you know, the constitutional right to confront their accusers. And so when you don't have that person available to testify, you know, the person being abused, that makes it more difficult at trial. But that should not be the overriding factor of we need to set up a jurisdiction, a law, and a process that can punish that person, even if the abused victim does not want to go forward with it. And so I think that's the key to these things is, you know, not just separating them, giving them a hotel room for the night and giving them a phone call, because we all too often see the woman in both of these situations, Gabby Petito and this most current situation, go back to their abuser. And then in the Gabby Petito case, it results in a death. Luckily, in this case, it did not. They were found, again, because of some publicity that was on in media. Somebody recognized them, the police in California. They were stopped in New Mexico when the assault took place and they were separated. Then somehow they got back together. They wound up going, continuing on their trip, which was their ultimate destination, was supposed to be California. They were found in California, and the California authorities, based on a warrant out of Tennessee for an unrelated theft charge in the past, were able to arrest him, and it was an extraditable warrant. So they held him in custody, and I assume he's going through the extradition process now to be removed back to Tennessee in custody. I don't know why the New Mexico authorities either didn't find that warrant from Tennessee or decided not to act on that warrant from Tennessee. But that's what happened in California. And now she's safe and hopefully back with her family or her support network. And he's in custody, being either being removed or back in Tennessee already on that former charge. So for the moment, for the time being, they're obviously not together. And hopefully she can get whatever help she might need.
Sure. It goes back to what happened there with the initial lack of a arrest. Was that training? Was that the jurisdiction rules on how they handle things? Is it a lack of staffing, you know, issue where there's just not the resources to pull one of these people out of the situation at that moment in time? Is that just really kind of still up in the air until it can be evaluated more?
Yeah, well, I know, like in Utah, where the Gabby Petito incident occurred, when they separated themselves, they took a hard look and an analysis of the officers' actions and whether they were within their protocol and training and policy at the time, and they're taking a hard look at that. And I hope the New Mexico authorities do the same thing. You know, they dodged a bullet here, but they have to look at how they handled this. You know, was the warrant missed? Was the warrant found and just not acted upon? You know, I don't know any of that. And so they need to do a hot wash. They need to do a hard look and a critique of how that situation was handled, because obviously it was handled differently in California. When they were located, he was arrested on that warrant. Now, I don't know when that warrant, I mean, I think from the time he was arrested from and then stopped in New Mexico was only about 2 or 3 weeks. So, you know, maybe the warrant wasn't lodged at the time he was stopped in New Mexico. I find that hard to believe. But, you know, the New Mexico authorities have to take a hard look at that and say, were they within training? And if they were, quite frankly, then the officers are okay, but they need to look at their process and their policies and change them.
I do want to give props to, I don't know who he, I don't have it in front of me, but he was the head of the department who did come out and say, look, things were done improperly here. We apologize. There will be consequences, and we need to go take a look at how this happened and why this happened. The transparency of it to the public, I cannot tell you, is how much of a breath of fresh air that is, where so many times we see departments just dig in and say, we did nothing wrong, and then you don't hear anything, right, and then nothing happened. Like that, it's a way to erode public confidence. It's that. It's the denial of responsibility or culpability for errors, because I think all of us understand we all make errors, including law enforcement, obviously. And if we can have more of that, more of, look, we're going to fix this. We got to figure this out. This was incorrectly handled, but we don't want it to happen again. How much more faith I think the public would be able to be regained in law enforcement as we see such a negative light shown on it all too often. But I think some of it is because of those attitudes and because of the, we're going to dig in, we're going to protect each other in here and not actually try to learn and grow. That just seems to be such a hang up in so many departments.
I think you're absolutely right. And I think it varies from jurisdiction to jurisdiction,
sure,
the relationship the police have with their community. But I think if the relationship is good, when you can admit to a mistake, people will understand, and they won't, you know, obviously penalties have to be paid.
Sure.
And training has to be adjusted. But that's how you get better. You know, you get better by admitting to your mistakes and changing your ways. And that's true in any facet of life and any vocation. You get better by learning from your mistakes, admitting to your mistakes first, and then learning from them, and then changing based on that learning curve. And so I think the public is somewhat sympathetic to that, but it's more important in law enforcement to do, because when we make mistakes, people can lose their lives. And
of course,
so we have to be cognizant of that. And we have to know that training is so important, and learning from our training and having a training cycle that addresses lessons learned from every incident. And so your training gets better, and then your activities get better, your enforcement gets better.
This is an examination of the hidden human condition.
This is the Hidden Killers Podcast
with Tony Bruschi.
Bobby Chacon, retired FBI, thank you so much for your insights. Hey, if you like the podcast and you want access to all of our episodes with no commercials, we got that for you. Sign up on Apple Podcasts and you'll get access to all of our shows. Not only this podcast, but all of our podcasts covering all different cases, all ad-free. Even try it out for 3 days free on Apple Podcasts right now. I highly encourage you to check that out. Great way of listening to the program. My name is Tony Bruschi. Follow me on Twitter at Tony B Pod. Stay with us.